Okay, so we're actually continuing from last week. We're in the middle of a Mishnah, a series of explanations last week. So I just want to review a little bit what we did last week and then catch up. We're on page 552, 553. And just to read again the Mishnayos that we read last week. So we were up to Perek Beis, with the second chapter. And we're up to Mishnah Yud, which is Mishnah number 10. Right, so it's chapter 2, Mishnah 10. And we read about last week, again, a little bit of review. Chamisha Talmidim Hayu Lola Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai. There were five students that Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai had. Again, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai, who essentially saved Yiddishkeit after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. The Eluheng, these are they, Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkanus, Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, Rabbi Shim ben Nisano, Rabbi Lozer ben Aruch. And Mishnah 11, after listing off the five Talmidim, the five students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, tells us the following. Hu Yomona Shivchan, he used to recount their praises. See, the Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, used to talk about, he had a tagline for each of his students. So Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkanus bor stud she'eino ma'abed tipa. Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkanus is a cemented cistern that doesn't lose a drop. In other words, everything and anything that he learns, he retains. You know, you can ask him about some shiur he went to, you know, 45 years ago. He remembers every single thing that took place during the talk. Rabbi Shua ben Chananya Ashrei Yoladato. Rabbi Shua ben Chananya, fortune is the one who gave birth to him. Happy is his mother who brought such a child into the world. So what we had gotten up to last week was we had spoken a little bit about these two great Tanoim, Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkanus and Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, two of the preeminent students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And we explained a little bit about their backgrounds and about these terms of affection and veneration that are applied to them by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Again, just to review a little bit, we spoke about Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkanus, someone born into a wealthy family but did not learn Torah until he was of the age of 28. And basically at that age, he was overcome by a yearning to go to Yerushalayim and learn at the feet of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Medrash tells us, literally taught him from like nothing. You know, he taught him how to say Kriya Shema, he taught him how to bench, you know, he taught him how to say Shemoneh Esrei, the most basic of things. And ultimately Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkanus grew to become one of the preeminent students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, a Gadol B'Yisrael, somebody who was one of the leading sages of the generation. And his father, the rich Hurkanus, who had wanted to disinherit Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkanus, ultimately ended up, you know, praising him and giving him all of his property. That's how impressed he was with the great scholar that Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkanus had become. So we spoke a little bit last week about the praise of Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkanus. You know, he never forgets anything. He retains everything that he learned. And Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkanus elsewhere is described as having never said anything that he didn't hear from his own Rebbe. And we quoted a Soloveitchik to the effect that what that really means is not that he was just a tape recorder, not that anybody nowadays knows what a tape recorder is, but not that he was just able to, you know, he just repeated what his Rebbe said and that was it, but everything that he said in the style of his Rebbe. In other words, he was so attuned to his Rebbe's methodology that whenever he would say something, he would ask himself, would my Rebbe have said this? You know, is this in line with my Rebbe's approach to understanding Torah? And so he combined this incredible wealth of knowledge, but with creativity as well. We spoke about Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, where the Mishnah says, Ashrei Yoladato, fortunate is the mother who gave birth to such a child. And we related that there are beautiful stories about the mother of Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, that when she was pregnant with Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, she went around to all of the Gedolim, all of the great sages of that time, and asked them to bless Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, that he should grow to be a Talmud Chacham. And once he was born, she brought his stroller into the Beis Medrash, And she said, you know, I understand, you know, he's not at a point where he can actually learn here in the Beis Medrash, but let his stroller sit here in the Beis Medrash. Let him hear the sounds of Jews learning Torah, and that's going to leave an impact on him as he gets older. And that's, you know, Ashrei Aladato. That's why his mother specifically is singled out as being worthy of praise over here. You know, the mother had a lot to do in this particular case with Rabbi Shua ben Hananya. Specifically, Ashrei Yoladato is understood by the commentaries as meaning that Rabbi Shua ben Hananya was possessed of wonderful midos, wonderful character traits in terms of how he interacted with people, such that when people would meet him, you know, they would walk away saying, wow, you know, fortunate, well, yeah, he was so well brought up, right? In other words, fortunate is the mother who brought this child into the world. Again, you know, not everybody appreciates scholarship, not everybody appreciates, you know, being careful about the minutia of mitzvahs. You know, that's something that sometimes you need to be a little bit more learned to really appreciate. But everybody understands a nice guy. Everybody appreciates somebody who has good midos, who has derech eretz, you know, who speaks to people nicely. So Rabbi Shua ben Hananya, you know, especially made that impression on people as being somebody who was blessed with wonderful character traits. That's where we got up to last time, speaking about these two out of the five great Talmidim, students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. We then go on to learn about certain students who were somewhat less known. Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, Chosid. Rabbi Yossi HaKohen is a pious person. What does it mean that Rabbi Yossi HaKohen is a pious person? So the Mefarshim say over here that what it means to be a chassid in this context is to observe not only the letter of the law itself, but to always be looking to go beyond the letter of the law, was called in Hebrew Lifnei Mishuras Hadin, going beyond the letter of the law, trying to embrace the spirit of the law. And although we don't have a lot of information in Shas about Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, it's interesting, you know, Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkanus, Rabbi Shur ben Hananya, they're all over the place, you know, in the Mishnah and the Gemara, they're quoted and discussed to a very great extent. We know so much about the biography of Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkanus in particular. Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, who's mentioned in the same breath with these two other, you know, great Gedolim, really we know very, very little about. I mean, the little we know about him, you know, is in the context of acts that are attributed to him that go lifnei mishuras hadin, that go beyond the letter of the law. And in that sense, that's why he's called the chassid, a pious person. Not just tell me what I can do and I'll do it, but, you know, tell me what I can do and I'll go beyond that, above and beyond that, in trying to fulfill what I perceive as being God's will. Rabbi Shimon ben Nathanael, Yirei Chet. Rabbi Shimon ben Nathanael was someone who fears sin. So, first of all, just one little biographical piece of information about Rabbi Shimon ben Nathanael. Rabbi Shimon ben Nathanael married into the family of Rabban Gamliel. He was married to the granddaughter of the first Rabban Gamliel, Rabban Gamliel HaZaken, who Rabban Gamliel the Elder, who lived while the second Beis HaMikdash was still standing. So that's one piece of biographical information which we know. Stands to reason that for someone to marry into the family of the Nasi, of the prince, of the head of the Jewish people, is probably a pretty special person, right? We can assume as much. Again, beyond that, we don't know an awful lot. The commentaries over here question why being a Yirei Chet, somebody who fears sin, is such an incredible turn of praise that, you know, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you know, sees that as being the greatest thing that he can possibly say about Rabbi Shimon ben Nathanael. To just amplify the question a little bit, at the very top of the page we have a statement from Hillel, where Hillel says, "Ein bur Yirei Chet." Somebody who's a boor cannot be a Yirei Chet, someone who's fearful of sin. Below Amaretz Chassid, an unlearned person can't be, you know, unusually pious, right? So the implication is that an Am Haaretz, someone who's not learned, can't be a Chassid, but a Yirei Chet, you know, someone who fears sin, he could be. So you're telling me Rav Shimon ben Nathanael was so incredible, he was able to achieve a level of piety that even an Am Ha'aretz, even an unlearned person, would be able to achieve? That doesn't sound like so much, right? If an Am Ha'aretz can be a Yerecha, can be a person who's fearful of sin, so it's a big deal. So Shimon ben Elsanu was a person who feared sin, you know, like, okay, so you're telling me he was afraid to break Shabbos because he didn't want to be punished for breaking Shabbos? Okay, that's a nice thing, but it's not an extraordinary thing. I mean, hopefully we would expect that any believing Jew would act in such a way. Right, but the term Yerechet is also used back by the Boer, right? So it's interesting. So the along those lines, the Reb Chaim Voloshin and his Ruach Chaim says, and others say this as well, just quoting Reb Chaim Voloshin because the particular manner in which he says it, the Yirei Chet, the one who fears sin, is cited over here, and the Yirei Chet is cited at the top of the page. Obviously, says Reb Chaim Voloshin, are two different things. In other words, even though it's the same terminology, obviously the terminology is being used in a different fashion in this Mishnah versus the way it was used before. Previously, we said a person who's unlearned could be a Yirei Chet in the sense that he knows that it's the wrong thing to break halacha. You know, it's the wrong thing to break Shabbos, it's the wrong thing to hurt people, whatever it happens to be. And he's afraid that God is going to hold him accountable if he does these things. The spiritual level, Rav Shimon ben Elsanu, says Rav Chaim Voloshin, was that he feared, as Rav Chaim Voloshin puts it, he feared the sin itself. It's not that he feared the punishment for the sin, but the same way somebody would look at a poison pill and say, I would never take this, because I'm afraid of being punished. Oh, if my parents catch me taking this poison pill, ach and vey, and who knows what they're going to do to me. No, that's not why I'm taking the poison pill. I don't take the poison pill because it's poison. I recognize that this is going to have a terrible, terrible impact on me, and I would never want to do anything like that. So Rav Shimon ben Elsanu feared sin itself. In other words, he recognized the terrible impact that sin has on the person's neshama, the terrible impact that the sin has on the person's soul, and that's why he kept away from sin. It was a very, very high level of piety that Rav Shimon ben Elsanu had, not just, I don't want God to punish me for my misdeeds, but I recognize, as the Rambam puts it, Osa ha'emes mipnei shehu emes, I do what's right because I recognize that it's right. I do what's true because I recognize that it's true. So that was the level that Rav Shimon ben Elsanu had. And in fact, when the Rambam talks about that level of adherence to God's word, he cites Avram Avinu as being an example of that level of piety. So Rav Shimon ben Elsanu apparently was in that kind of league, with an Avram Avinu. Finally, for Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, the last of these five Talmidim, was Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, and he was Kimayon Hamisgaber, like a spring flowing stronger and stronger. And what's meant to be conveyed by this turn of phrase is that Rabbi Elazar ben Arach was an incredibly, incredibly creative mind, and he could come up constantly with novel insights into Torah that no one had ever thought of before in terms of their learning and their understanding what the Torah had to say. We continue in Yud Beis. We're going to tie all this together. I'm not leaving these five Talmidim, but let's just see Yud Beis, where Mishnah 12 continues this discussion of these five Talmidim and their relative merits. Who are your Omer? He, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, used to say, after talking about how wonderful these five students were, he used to say, "Im yu kochachne Yisrael b'chaf moznayim." If all of the sages of Israel were on a scale, if you could take all of the sages and put them on one side of a scale, Eliezer ben Hyrcanus b'chaf shnia, and I would put Eliezer ben Hyrcanus alone on the other side of the scale, Machria est kulam, he would outweigh all of them. Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus' powers were so incredible that in the view of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, his Rebbe, he was equal, if not greater, than to all of the Jewish sages, to all of the Chachmei Yisrael, the Gedolei Yisrael put together. That's pretty big, okay, right? That's pretty big. And but then we have the following statement. Abba Shaul Omer Mishmo. Abba Shaul, who lived later on in history, Abba Shaul, the Gemara actually says, worked, just a beautiful insight into the way the, you know, what the Chacham did in their spare time. Abba Shaul says the Gemara was a baker in the house of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. So in other words, that was his day job, I guess. Half of the time he was wearing white, half of the time he was wearing black, you know, depending on what he was doing that particular day. So Abba Shaul Omer Mishmo, Abba Shaul said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, in other words, he quoted the previous statement differently. If all of the sages of Israel would be placed in a scale, Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus Afi Moim, including Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus, Rabbi Elazar ben Aroch b'chaf shniya, and the second side of the scale had not Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus, but rather Rabbi Elazar ben Aroch, machriya es kulam. It's Rabbi Elazar ben Aroch, in the view of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was equal to, if not greater, than all of the Chachmei Yisrael, than all of the Chachamim put together. In other words, you know, he didn't say this statement about Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus. He made this incredible statement about Rabbi Elazar ben Aroch and his powers, which in the view of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai were considered to be something really extraordinary and greater than all of the other Chachamim, all of the other sages put together. Now what's going on in this last piece where Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus, you know, there's this dispute about, you know, who's greater? You know, who is the greatest gadol, right? Name your greatest gadol. Was it Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus? Was it Rabbi Elazar ben Aroch? Well, yeah, you know, it sounds almost juvenile, you know. Right, so Abba Shaul has a different tradition as to what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said. In other words, Abba Shaul,
he said either or.
Right, so another Abba Shaul is coming many, many generations afterwards and saying, no, that's not what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said it's Rabbi Elazar ben Aroch, you know, who's the top of the heap. You know, he's the best guy in the Beis Medrash, right? You know, best guy in Yavna, so to speak. Right, that was the tradition from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. What's going on over here, and why do we care? In other words, why do we need to have a Mishnah telling us this gadol is greater, that gadol is greater? You know, what's our takeaway from here? So almost all of the Mefarshim basically relate this dispute, the question as to what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said in Mishnah Yudbeis, to a dispute which appears in the Gemara at the end of Masechta Horios. And there the following question is posed. Who's greater as a Talmud Chacham? Sinai or Oker Harim? What do these two terms mean? Sinai is like Har Sinai, Mount Sinai. Oker Harim means someone who uproots mountains. What's uprooting mountains? What, we're talking about Superman over here? What's going on over here? So the Gemara's term, Oker Harim, uprooting mountains, is a metaphor that describes a Talmud Chacham who's brilliant and has incredible powers of analysis, creativity, and originality. In other words, you know, he can take, you know, intellectually, he can take a mountain which you would think is as fixed and unmovable as possible, and he can rip the mountain, again figuratively, out of the ground, because that's how creative and innovative a thinker he is, to be able to put things together that no one else would have ever thought of putting together. In contrast, a Sinai, like the term implies, is somebody who has an incredible breadth of knowledge. You know, he's the walking encyclopedia. You ask him anything, it's kind of like he was at Sinai and he got it all. You know, he has this incredible breadth of knowledge. The Oker Harim, the uprooter of mountains, may not have the same breadth of knowledge, but he's, you know, has this incredible creative and innovative mind where he's able to come up with novel and new ways of looking at things. So the Gemara asked the question in Horios, at the very end of Masechta Horios, which kind of Talmud Chacham, which kind of scholar is considered to be superior? The one who knows everything, but is not renowned for his creativity, or the one who doesn't know as much but is renowned for his innovative and creative approach and can come up with new chidushim, new novel ways of looking at things that the average person can't come up with. I mean, obviously the answer is that nobody is, no human being is only one or only the other, and you need a degree of both things in order to be successful. My Rebbe, Rav Heschel Schechter, once quoted in one of his Sfarim, I don't know who the origin of this joke is, but someone once remarked, jokingly, that, obviously, even the Oker Harim, even the one who uproots mountains, needs to know something, because otherwise, he can go looking around for Sinai, but he doesn't know where to find him. He could uproot Sinai if he found him, but he doesn't know where Sinai is. So everybody needs a little bit of both. You need to have a certain breadth of knowledge. You need to have a certain degree of creativity. I mean, otherwise you're just spitting things back. But the question is, in terms of which attribute a person should have more of, which is the more valuable kind of Talmud Chacham, which is the better thing. Yeah.
I want to say, isn't it the same thing when, let's say, two people have talent,
yeah,
one is using it and one is not? We know,
yeah,
he has talent,
yeah,
but what is the purpose of it if he's not using it?
Right. So we're not talking over here where they're not using the talents that they have. In other words, there's one person who's a scholar and he knows it all, right? So in other words, you want to know, I saw something once upon a time in a book, I can't remember exactly where it was. Oh, well, go ask Rabbi X. You ask Rabbi X where it is. Yeah, it was this volume on page 432, five lines to the top of the page. There actually are people who can do that. I know some of them. Not me, but I happen to know some of them. And they can tell you exactly where it is, exactly where to find it, and that sort of thing. And then you ask him, okay, and so that idea which you saw in that book, how would you apply that to this case or that case? They're not as good. There's certain people who maybe can't identify where everything is, or may not have the same breadth of knowledge, but when they try to apply that knowledge, they have very creative ways of applying that knowledge and coming up with new ways of understanding. They have a depth of understanding that the other person may not have. In a certain sense, to put it in one or two words in English, it's a breadth versus depth issue. In other words, some people have a breadth of knowledge, some people have a depth of knowledge. Which one is considered to be superior?
If somebody has a wealth of knowledge, then they know all the mitzvahs and everything like that. So if somebody is creative, that's great. But if they don't know all the mitzvahs and everything,
right,
then
right,
they're lacking something.
Right. So again, clearly, we're not talking about where one has only one or only the other. Because again, If a guy says, I'm a Talmud Chacham, I know nothing, but, I think really well, that's not going to work, you have to know some information. But the truth is, look, even with people who are very erudite, there's some people who, they know the basic amount, and then there's some people who just know everything, like you can ask them anything, and they know everything. Again, Lahavdil, in a secular field, it's not so different. You talk about different doctors, So again, if a doctor comes and tells you, I never went to medical school. My notion of what goes on inside the human body is basically formed by a comic book that I read when I was five, but I think really well. So if that guy's going to be your surgeon, you'd probably think twice. I have a really creative idea about how to deal with the problem that's ailing you. Thank you very much. I don't really want creativity right about now. But it's not everybody has to know a certain requisite amount of knowledge. But you have the doctor who knows all the procedures that everybody does on a standard basis. And then you have certain types of doctors who, will come up with a really original way of dealing with the problem that the average doctor may not have thought of, So sometimes those doctors don't know as much as the other doctor. He may not have gone through everything that the other doctor knows. But sometimes a creative way of looking at a problem, and a creative way of coming up with solution is actually better than having all of the, the information. Again, to have no information at all, that's a non-starter. But, between these two things, which is better? So the Gemara poses the question in Horios, And the Gemara says, in the end of the day, Sinai, the one who has the breadth of knowledge, is better, because in the words of the Gemara, Hakol Tzrichin L'Morei Chitayo, everybody needs the person who has the wheat. In other words, you can have a creative way of dealing with the wheat. You have a great recipe for some kind of cake or something like that, but if you don't have the wheat, you're not going to make the cake, right? You need the basic information to be able to understand Torah on some level. All right, so that settles it. Well, it doesn't quite settle it, because some of the later commentaries make the following comment on that Gemara. Maybe the Gemara only said that the person who has the breadth of knowledge is superior in a day and age when the Torah was mostly memorized, where they didn't have books, where the Torah was really a Torah Sheba'al Peh, an oral Torah. Back then, in other words, I need to know information. I can't just walk over to a library and pull off a sefer off the shelf. Nowadays, you need to know a piece of information. You can Google it. I mean, it sounds like a little, not to say that Google is the answer to everything, but, we have not only Svarim, you can go on the computer and you can access in a moment hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Svarim and search them using a search engine and come up with information. Now, again, that doesn't substitute for somebody knows their stuff. Again, if you went to a doctor, Lahavdil, and the doctor told you, I Googled this, don't worry, you're in good hands, open heart surgery, there's a Wikipedia page on it, I am so good to go, you have nothing to worry about, right? So, it could be that you wouldn't be so confident going under the knife under those circumstances. Okay, so again, you need to know a certain basic amount, but nowadays the need to have somebody who knows everything is not quite as acute as it was once upon a time. So maybe nowadays the Gemara would have resolved the question in a different direction. Maybe nowadays the Gemara would have said that Oker Harim, the person who has creativity, is really the better one of the two. In any case, all of the Mefarshim relate this debate back to what's going on over here. Who's better, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus or Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch? What do you mean? Because Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus is the prototype of the Sinai, of the person, as we said before, he's a bor sud she'eno ma'abed tipa. He's a cemented cistern. You put any water into the cistern, he doesn't lose a drop. In other words, everything he ever learned, everything that's out there to learn, he knew. He was the encyclopedia. He knew it backwards and forwards. He was the index.
But he had no way to pull it out.
Right. But apparently Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch, again, relatively speaking, was more of the creative, innovative mind. He was the Oker Harim. He was the one who uprooted mountains. And the question was, of these two great individuals, no one debates that they're both great, but who was a little bit greater? Who was a little bit more necessary for the continuity of the future of Klal Yisrael? And that's the debate between the first statement attributed to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and the second statement attributed to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Who's the greater Talmud Chacham? Who's the greater scholar? Is it the one who knows everything, or the one who has that kind of creative, innovative approach, who can come up with things that that no one else realized were there, even when they saw the same material?
Book smart, street smart type of thing. Like some street smart can eventually become book smart. Book smart people don't always get that. Like if you have it, you have it.
It's,
have street smart, I think they're missing so much. So, and you felt like you can't learn. There are certain things you can learn, certain things you can't.
Right. So it may be related, but it's. I would say it's more different. Two different types of book smart. In other words, there's some people read the books and they remember the books, and there's some people who read the books and and they see new things in it. They say a story about Reb Chaim Soloveitchik that somebody once quoted a certain commentary to him as saying something. And Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, right off the bat, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik had one of the most incredible creative minds probably the last couple of hundred years. So Reb Chaim Soloveitchik right off the bat said, No, that commentary didn't say that. Okay, they were a little bit taken aback. it's one thing to say I remember where something was said. It's a whole different level to say, no, that doesn't exist, right? No, that isn't something that is actually a source. So somebody asked him afterwards, and he commented. He said, it's not that I have such an incredible breadth of knowledge. Again, relatively speaking, that probably wasn't entirely true. But, you know, it's not that I have such a breadth of knowledge, but my knowledge of how that commentary operates is such that I know that that commentary never could have said the thing that was attributed to him. So that's the Mayan HaMisgaber. Somebody who not only has the information, but has such a depth of understanding of information that you can see things in the information, you can see things there that the average person wouldn't necessarily have picked up on.
Yes,
it's interesting, right? So it was the story we had from the Pirkei de Rebbe Elezer described Rebbe Elezer ben Hyrcanus as the Mayan HaMisgaber. It used the very same words that are used here about Rebbe Elezer ben Aruch. So apparently he had that ability. Again, it's hard to imagine the Rebbe Elezer ben Hyrcanus, all he knew was just to be able to spit back. Because again, you know, again, Lahavdil, in any field, you know, somebody of greatness knows more than just how to spit back information. You know, they know how to process and analyze the information. But relatively speaking, the strength of Rebbe Elezer ben Aruch was in creativity. Relatively speaking, the strength of Rebbe Elezer ben Hyrcanus was in the retention of information.
How much further down the line was Abishol? Was he in time when things were written down?
He was a contemporary of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi.
Oh, yeah.
So again, depending on when during that period exactly we're talking about, they had started perhaps writing down the Mishnah.
But he had the benefit of 20/20 hindsight.
Right.
See how things stand out.
Right. So the truth is, maybe that accounts for his, you know, his rendering of things, that already at that point things were beginning to be written down.
Also, yeah. Is there a fine line where creativity stops and what are you allowed to do? Or is that confined to the
style of
you give them a
little bit? Right. So, again, even, you know, creativity doesn't mean you go off the rails, right? In other words,
it can't be this out of the pale, you know?
Right. But in other words, but the rails are pretty wide. You know, the rails are a lot wider than people think they are. You know, there's a lot of room for creativity and innovation, even within, you know, what our Mishnah teaches.
You know, we've set that so you can see more than if you're just looking at the same thing.
Right. No, that could be. So let me just go back to something that we raised last week and try to wrap all of this up. So we have this very unusual circumstance in which the Talmidei Chachamim are being evaluated in terms of their, you know, outstanding traits. I guess something we haven't had and will not have again in Pirkei Avos. You know, we don't have a parallel statement about Hillel here in Pirkei Avos. Right? So here, all of a sudden, it's very, very important to talk about the traits that characterize each of these five Talmidim, to the point where we're even getting involved in discussions about who's greater. Right? Again, very, very odd kind of discussions. And we pointed out last week that it's not entirely accurate to say that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had five and only five Talmidim. He had a lot of Talmidim. He had a lot of students. So why are we singling out these five, particularly when the last three of these five are, you know, people whose names are not particularly well known? Okay, Rebbe Elezer, Rebbe Yeshua, okay, you know, they appear all over the place. You know, there are probably other more popular choices, you know, for the outstanding Talmid of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you know, versus the, you know, more so than the last three who were mentioned over here. I think perhaps one can suggest the following in terms of understanding all of these Mishnayos and what Pirkei Avos is trying to teach us over here. As we mentioned last week, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai basically rebuilt Yiddishkeit after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. And the question which really these Mishnayos are trying to grapple with is the following. What traits are necessary? What traits are the most important traits that the Jewish community needs in order to perpetuate Torah? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had a lot of students, but he felt that these five students, each of them possessed some essential ingredient for perpetuating Torah after Torah had almost been destroyed. So what do you need to perpetuate Torah? Well, you need a breadth of Torah knowledge, you need a depth of Torah knowledge. You need midos tovos, you need good character traits, you need the readiness not only to do what the Torah demands, but the sense of wanting to go above and beyond what the Torah demands. And you need a healthy sense of yiras shamayim, of fear of heaven, in order to make all of this mix come together. These five Talmidim represent the five essential traits that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai thought had to be in place in order to rebuild Yiddishkeit. And that's why, specifically over here, there's so much emphasis on these traits. It's not just, oh, you know, this rabbi is great for this reason, this rabbi is great for that reason. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is saying, if we have to rebuild Yiddishkeit from scratch, which to a large extent they sort of did, you know, after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, these are the essential ingredients. And these essential ingredients are important for every person. It's not just a historical insight. But as you look to build yourself up, again, you're not going to be on the level of these Gedolei Yisrael, but whatever, on whatever level you are, what are the important ingredients you need to make yourself the best Jew that you can possibly be? Breadth in Torah, depth in Torah, Yiras Shamayim, the idea of going listening Yeshua Sadin, beyond the letter of the law, and a sense of Midos Tovos, you know, and all of these things that each of these five Talmidim exemplified, these are the essential ingredients. And then we can even debate, of these ingredients, which is the most important, you know, which is the central ingredient, which we have to add into the mix in order to make Yiddishkeit, you know, work, either for ourselves on a personal level or on a community level. So that's this whole discussion about, is the breadth of Torah more important? Is the depth of Torah more important? You know, which, again, you know, it doesn't sound like Pirkei Avos really resolves the question. On some level, you know, you need both. So that I think, is what's going on over here, why there's so much time being spent in Pirkei Avos to try to appreciate and understand where these five, you know, the character traits of these five Talmidei Chacham and these five Gedolei Yisrael. It's not just to give them taglines, it's not just we're writing their yearbook and we have to put a, you know, a nice little phrase under each of their pictures. No, no. What's that? This is me. You know. So, all right, money back at the end of this year if you don't like it. So I think one can suggest maybe is what's going on over here.
All of these traits, and these are the people that excel.
Yeah, again, you know, it doesn't make sense to say, and you know, Rabbi Shua ben Chananya had good midos, and the other four, no, not at all, right? That doesn't make any sense. Again, this, you know, certain people excel in one thing, you know, even if it doesn't mean that the other people didn't have them and weren't, you know, extraordinary in other ways as well. Okay, next...